Chapter 26. Your thoughts, General Bishop? Admiral Zhao looked at me as we stood around the holographic display tank in the conference room aboard his flagship, the battlecruiser Qianghan. Along with assembling a United Nations Third Fleet attack force from the 7 battlecruisers available at Ragnar Station, Zhao had issued a directive that the former Extinction-class ships be referred to as the Courageous Class. It made sense to assign a new class designation to ships that had been through the extensive refit process at Ragnar Station. In many ways, they were radically different from the ships we were gifted by the ECO. The lead ship on new Maxulk's battlecruisers to complete refit had been named Yongan when it reached Earth. Yongan being a Chinese word that translates to courageous or brave, something like that. Zhao didn't like using alien names for our ships, enemy alien names. And he sure didn't like them being associated with Extinction, not with our home world under threat from the cloud. On that subject, I completely agreed with him. And yes, technically, the ships were designated as the Yongan class. But as Skippy says, I barely speak English, so I thought of them as the Courageous class. Whatever. That's what happens when you assemble an international force. I think... I manipulated the holo controls to zoom out so the star at the heart of the Tassa Fordanda system looked like a yellow golf ball. This name of this battle will cause confusion for generations of military historians. While others around the tank looked at me in confusion, Zhao knew what I meant. I wish you had not mentioned the reference, he grimaced. The Battle of Tassa Foranga in the Great Pacific War was a serious defeat for the attacking force. That depends on your definition of who was the aggressor, I said. What Zhao referred to as the Great Pacific War, Americans called the Pacific Theater of World War II. The Japanese had the initiative back then. Here, we can decide whether to engage or not. We have the initiative. My barracks lawyering was not convincing him. Tassa Foranga was a disaster for the American fleet. After the battle, you had only a handful of cruisers operational in the entire Pacific theater. It was a tactical defeat for the U.S. Navy, I pointed out, but a strategic victory. The Japanese, I avoided looking at Commander Ozawa of Japan as I spoke, were unable to resupply their forces on Guadalcanal, and they withdrew a few months later. We cannot afford tactical defeats. He studied the image, then returned its area of display to the formation of enemy warships that were the focus of the discussion. Enemy warships. Maxulk's warships. As UNEF Command suspected, the Rotten Kitties anticipated we would retaliate against the Bosphorak, and they positioned task forces of their own ships outside the star systems we were most likely to strike. The Bosphorak had a thin screen of their own ships ranged around their habitable planets, with picket ships and stealth at various distances from the worlds they were protecting. The enemy tactics were clear. The Bosphorak defenses deliberately appeared weak to lure us in for an attack. As their ships near the target world avoided engaging us, other than wrapping our ships in a damping field, the picket ships would jump out to summon their patrons to give us a beatdown. UNEF Command had provided Zhao with a suggested list of targets based on data provided by Skippy about known Bosphorak defenses, planetary populations, industrial development and output, location relative to wormholes to provide ingress and egress, and a whole lot of other factors. Zhao had a tough job. He had to avoid any engagement that carried a significant risk of losing even one of our new battlecruisers while still striking a target important enough to be considered revenge for the attack against Earth. If all the Navy accomplished was pounding some isolated planets no one ever heard of, the galaxy would view us as weak, and we would be in a poor position to negotiate a meaningful deal with the senior species. We had a couple advantages going for us. First, the enemy expected that an orbital bombardment of a Bosphorak world would be secondary to us crashing a wormhole network in Birdbrain territory. We knew that, because Skippy had intercepted message traffic between Bosphorak ships, warning not to get into a position where they could access only one Elder wormhole in case we crashed one of their networks. That unusual deployment of ships meant the Birdbrains had left some of their star systems very lightly defended. Those were systems located near only a single active wormhole. Our second advantage was also due to the continued awesomeness of Skippy. The communication security of the Maxalts was exceptional, and they demanded their clients also lock down any and all information about the presence or absence of Maxalts warships at a star system. The Bosphorak complied in admirable fashion, apparently avoiding the use of data relay stations entirely and not even transmitting sensitive information via encrypted bursts between ships. Apparently, they carried messages between ships by hand, or in the case of the bird brains, by claw. Information was exchanged face-to-face strictly on an as-needed basis. There was not, Skippy complained, much for him to work with. But Skippy the Magnificent is awesome, in case you hadn't heard. He had his way with Bosphorak relay stations and absorbed yottabytes, or whatever he calls it, of unclassified data. The information came from civilian databases, including mundane information about commercial transactions. Probably no one else would think the information about civilian commerce was important. That's why none of it was encrypted. But Skippy's ginormous brain noticed that in certain Bosphorak star systems, local merchants were stocking up on food delicacies and other luxury goods favored by the Maxalts. Those enterprising merchants had somehow heard rumors of their exalted patrons having ships near their star system, and the merchants anticipated that the Maxalts, bored while stuck inside their ships waiting for us to attack, might use Bosphorak picket ships as couriers to procure fresh food and other items to make the dull routine more tolerable. Or perhaps the Maxalts would like to celebrate after they smashed the human navy. Either way, it gave us an unexpected and excellent indication of which star systems were likely to have Maxalts task forces nearby. We confirmed Skippy's information in three star systems. Our little former giraffe the destroyers use in their advanced stealth to scout for signs not of stealthed Maxalts warships, but of their client picket ships jumping in, remaining for a short time, and jumping away. Our scouts launched stealthy, high-speed probes that confirmed the presence of Maxalts warships based on the dent their mass made in spacetime, and from trace gases unavoidably leaking from those ships. Zhao scratched those systems off the list. Even Skippy could only guess which type of enemy ships were in stealth, but he knew for certain their substantial mass meant an enemy task force bigger than anything the Third Fleet could comfortably handle. After scouting and rejecting five star systems, we narrowed our list of potential targets to star systems that represented less risk to us. Less risk did not mean no risk. Zhao still had an objective to accomplish. That is why he called for a conference of all captains aboard his flagship while he considered whether to attack the star system the Bosphorak called Tassa Fordanda. The Bosphorak defenses at the inhabited planet there were nothing our ships couldn't handle, even without Skippy. The problem was we had detected a formation of Maxalts warships about 2 light hours from the target planet, a formation of ships that were waiting to ambush us if we jumped in to bombard the planet from orbit. Zhao could have sent in only a few ships to conduct the orbital bombardment, keeping the other battle cruisers in reserve to respond if the Maxalts attacked. When they attacked. He wasn't going to keep any ships in reserve. Because we weren't searching for the presence of Maxalts warships to decide whether attacking the planet was worth the risk. We were hunting for them. Yeah, that surprised me too. When I understood that the Maxalts would very likely position task forces near Bosphorak star systems to ambush our raiding force, I knew a normal brain would have had a reaction something like, "Danger, Will Robinson!" My brain instead said, "That sounds like a target-rich environment." Back when I presented the concept of attacking the kiddies rather than avoiding them, I expected Admiral Zhao to shoot me down, so I went into the meeting armed with a slick deck of PowerPoint slides to dazzle him. But when he heard the prospect of the enemy positioning isolated battle groups that could not support each other, he immediately saw a tempting opportunity to defeat the enemy in detail. So, the good news is I didn't need to persuade him to attack. The bad news is I wasted many hours on that PowerPoint deck for nothing. Damn it. I worked hard on that thing. As a side note, UNEF might also have been surprised that their hand-picked Navy commander was eager to go looking for trouble, taking his ships into harm's way. The rumor was that UNEF had selected Zhao because they expected him to be the anti-bishop, calm, steady, cautious, predictable. Someone UNEF command could control. Maybe he had been holding back his aggressive instincts until he got the UN Navy commander slot, or maybe his career just hadn't given him an opportunity to be anything more than a glorified staff officer. My original impression of him was that he was boring and stodgy, and my original impression was dead wrong. Our new Navy was lucky to have a leader like him. Anyway, Zhao wasn't going to wait for the enemy to respond. He planned to jump in to surround the Maxulk's task force and beat the shit out of them. Make a statement. It was a bold and risky strategy. Maybe not so risky when you consider that he had to conduct a raid somewhere, and any star system important enough to be a worthy target for us would almost certainly have at least a battle group of Maxulk's ships waiting to pounce on us. It was better to hit them before they hit us. If we could do that. There were two questions Zhao had to take into account. First, what were our new ships capable of doing in combat? And second, how heavy was the opposition? I don't know that we'll find a better opportunity, sir. I pointed at the synthetic image of the Maxulk's formation, sticking the tip of my finger inside the hologram so it tingled slightly. Our scout destroyers had again located what might be a formation of stealth Maxulk's warships and confirmed the presence of senior species ships by sending probes on a flyby. We were waiting for Skippy to process the probe data.
We don't have to act immediately, said Admiral Cross.
The two of us got along a lot better after he left my ship. He had taken command of the Independence at Ragnar, and I had to admit the guy was busting his ass to get his ship and crew ready for a fight.
No, Zhao agreed. We do need to act soon.
Every day we delay gives us time to bring our crews up to speed, Cross said, looking at me as if he expected me to object.
I held up my hands. Valkyrie is ready to fight. I can't speak for anyone else. It took us a long time to get the ship flight-worthy. There are not even training manuals yet for the Yongan-class ships. Zhao interrupted.
Every day gives us time to prepare, and every day gives the enemy more time to attack Earth again. Everyone in the galaxy is waiting for us to respond. Each day we do nothing makes us look weaker.
Admiral Cross, is your ship ready or not? Cross stiffened. A muscle in his jaw twitched. He was trying to decide how to respond. Zhao wouldn't relieve Cross of command, but he could assign Independence to a humiliating supporting role. He also knew that Zhao read the daily reports from each ship of progress made toward qualifying the crews and integrating the Jirapta AIs with the alien ship's electronic architecture. Still, it was Cross's call whether he thought it would be suicide to take his untested ship and crew into battle.
Skippy says Independence's AI is capable of handling the ship in basic combat maneuvers under controlled conditions. If we sustain significant battle damage and have to rely on backup systems...
He held a hand out, palm upward. I felt sympathy for Cross, and also for Zhao. The Admiral in command of the Third Fleet and of the United Nations Navy overall had a very tough call to make.
Bishop, Zhao turned his attention back to me. If our ships get into trouble?
My eyes flicked to Sims, who was standing next to Admiral Cross. It would be unprofessional to say that if the attacking force got into trouble, the merry band of pirates would assist Sims's ship first. It was also the reality, and everyone knew it.
We will do our best, sir. I can't ask for anything else.
Skippy?
Yes?
The beer can's avatar shimmered to life to the side of the main hologram.
Have you developed a better estimate of the opposition?
Zhao meant the number and types of Maxulk's warships concealed within their stealth fields.
Wow, that's a tough one. You understand that without active sensors, I have to rely on extremely vague data about the sizes and shapes of their stealth fields, trace gases, molecules flaking off the hulls, and the way their masses create a dent in space-time. That is not much information to work with.
Yes. You are, however, awesome. As I have been led to believe.
Zhao's eyes flicked from Skippy to me.
You are questioning my awesomeness?
Skippy didn't even look mad, he just couldn't believe it.
Impress me.
Okay, well, Based on all that very vague data I just mentioned, all I can do is make an educated guess. The opposition is one battleship of the older Punisher class. There are also three heavy cruisers of two different types. They are also older ships that are no longer considered to be frontline combat vessels. Plus, there is an escort squadron consisting of six destroyers, with one of those destroyers being an almost brand new ship. I can tell because the outer ceramic coating of the armor has not had time to wear away from micrometeorite impacts and still has the new ship shine to it. Where was I? Oh, yes. Finally, there is a transport ship that I suspect is used for carrying spare parts and fuel, and perhaps for crew R&R. He paused. If you like, I can venture guesses on the exact names of the other ships in the task force, although I would be relying on incomplete records, so my guesses would only be 49% accurate and...
No, Zhao laughed, the first time I'd seen him laugh in weeks. That will not be necessary, Mr. Skippy. I apologize for questioning your awesomeness.
Skippy sniffed.
Four heavy combatants plus six escorts. Zhao considered. Against seven of our battlecruisers.
Eight, I reminded him quietly.
Seven, he insisted.
We had gone over that argument several times.
I will not act unless we can conduct the attack without assistance from Valkyrie.
We'd had the argument, and he had made the decision, so I just nodded. It was his call.
Mr. Skippy, can you model an engagement? Zhao requested.
Okay, will do. And done.
Done?
Zhao looked at me in surprise. I shrugged.
Like I said, Skippy is awesome.
To be clear, Skippy explained, and there wasn't even a hint of boastfulness in his tone. To him, it was not something worth bragging about. I created a war game model programmed with known performance characteristics of the ships involved on both sides. Then I ran various scenarios through the model roughly 400 million times.
400 million, Zhao muttered to himself.
There are a lot of variables, Skippy said. I quickly learned what works and what doesn't work. For example, you mentioned attacking with only seven battlecruisers. That would be a mistake. The model clearly shows you should include your destroyer squadron in the fight.
To risk lesser technology vessels would be smart.
It would be smart, Skippy insisted, if you deploy them properly. Remember, escort ships have less armor plating, weaker shields, and fewer missile launchers and cannons, but they carry the same type of missiles. The enemy is certain to bring their destroyers into the fight. Most likely, they will throw their entire squadron at a single one of your battlecruisers. My wargame model shows the highest probability of a successful attack is for your destroyers to engage theirs and keep their squadron scattered. Zhao leaned forward on the rail around the holographic display sphere.
Show me.
Captain Sims, I said as casually as I could, not emphasizing the title of captain. She was a fellow starship commander, nothing more, nothing less. Except that was 1,000% bullshit, and we both knew it. So did the bridge crews of both our ships, Valkyrie and Defiant. Tamara Jennifer Sims was special. She was special to me. She had saved our ship more than once, and saved my sorry ass more times than I can count. Sometimes she felt a need to act like a surrogate mother, but only when I needed that, whether it irritated me or not. Maybe especially when it irritated me. She had been with me since the beginning, when we flew away from paradise on a wing and a prayer, having not one single clue what a mind-bogglingly weird journey lay ahead of us. Other than Adams and Chang, Sims had been with me the longest, through terror, tragedy, and triumph. My feelings for her were complicated. Respect, admiration, gratitude, guilt when I did something she wouldn't approve of that I knew I shouldn't be doing, and affection. Not that kind of affection, but yeah, I had pretty strong feelings for her. I wanted her to be happy. I wanted her to be safely outside the galaxy with Frank, worrying about growing things in the new ecosystem there, rather than worrying about the survival of humanity. Unfortunately for Sims, humanity needed her to step up again, so that a miserable ball of mud infested with monkeys did not perish.
Captain Bishop, she replied, one side of her mouth curling up in a brief smile.
She looked tired,
and I knew from looking in the mirror that morning that I looked just as weary. Everyone aboard all the ships with us had been grinding long hours to prepare for battle, a battle we would not be fully prepared for unless Zhao delayed the engagement far longer than the governments of Earth were prepared to wait. There was no time for proper workups with the new crew members, no opportunity to conduct real-life war games to develop and test new tactics. We ran one combat simulation after another until my brain was numb and I didn't know whether I was truly learning anything or not. Whatever level of mental exhaustion I felt, it had to be worse for Sims. She had taken command of the battlecruiser Defiant, one of the ships designated for use by multiple nations. That had been Zhao's decision when we reached Ragnar and learned only 7 of the battlecruisers there would be through the refit process in time to join the strike. The other 4 ships could only get partial upgrades until we acquired more raw materials, and that might not happen until after we completely disassembled Ragnar Station and moved it to FOB Jia Yuguan. So, Sims got the Defiant, one of the ships designated for an international crew, while Admiral Cross got the American Independence. With 7 ships available, Zhao tagged 5 for the 5 permanent UNEF member nations, with 2 for international uses as UNEF saw fit. Zhao had the Qiang Han as his flagship, a ship I thought of by its translated name, Intrepid. None of those ships were my responsibility, but like I said, Sims is special, and the crew of Valkyrie had a soft spot in our hearts for the Defiant. "Are you ready?" I asked. We were both in our respective offices. Hers looked identical in form to mine, but a lot nicer in detail. She had photos on the wall. I had never done that. Note to self, stop living like I'm in a barracks. If she looked tired before, my question made a great wave of weariness flash across her face. "No, we need a year, 6 months at least, just to learn how to maneuver these ships in combat. They are a lot different from Valkyrie." "Faster reactions," I said, based on what I had observed when the courageous class ships conducted exercises while we waited for the star carriers to recharge. The Jurapta AIs of the new ships did not have the restrictions that prevented Skippy from controlling the flight of Valkyrie or firing weapons. Courageous class ships only needed clumsy monkeys to tell the AI what they wanted, then the AI made the ship move or aimed and fired the weapons much faster than any biological being could. Valkyrie's crew had gotten exceptionally good at working within the restrictions, and Bilby was steadily nibbling away at his own internal restrictions. Originally, Bilby had the same restrictions as Skippy, because his basic programming had been provided by Skippy. While Skippy unfortunately was unable to help Bilby grow, it appeared that Bilby could adjust his own programming without interference. For example, the point defense cannons were now almost fully automated, requiring only a weapons-free authorization from the bridge. Our mighty battlecruiser also dodged and weaved during evasive maneuvers without the pilots needing to think about it or to issue specific instructions. A courageous class ship could react more quickly than Valkyrie could, though still awkwardly compared to a Maxulk ship. Skippy was confident the upgrades would give our ships an edge in combat. Skippy would hopefully be sitting out the fight, so maybe his opinion was not as comforting as he thought. "Faster," Sims agreed. "That's a positive. On the negative side of the ledger, Defiant's armor plating is thinner in critical areas. The shield generators overall are not as robust. What bothers me most is the point defense system is slow compared to Valkyrie. Skippy is working on that. He told me it's still an improvement over what the ships had when we took them."
You want me to ask him to work faster?"
She gave me a hint of a smile.
"I already did that. It's a hardware issue. There's only so much he can do with the gear aboard our ships. There is a plan for another round of upgrades."
She stopped to rub her temples.
"Yeah, I know. When we get the materials and the time."
Skippy had assembled Valkyrie from multiple ships, taking the best items from each hull and using the leftovers as spare parts and raw material for the ship's fabricators to build components more advanced than anything the Maxulks had. Since the Lego pieces of the ship were put together, he had been constantly tweaking and adjusting and upgrading, and constantly whining that the ship needed more tweaking and adjusting and upgrading. We couldn't do that with the new ships, because there simply wasn't enough of the critical exotic materials for the fabricators at Ragnar to work with. UNEF Command had rejected the option of tearing apart three of our new battlecruisers to feed into the fabricators for upgrading the 15 other ships. Damn. Not too long ago, the UN regular Navy had zero Maxulk's battlecruisers. Sooner or later, the command would have to face the reality that it is impossible to keep all 18 ships operational, and I'm betting they would get slapped in the face with that reality soon. Like, after the upcoming battle. Unless our battle damage was of the best-case scenario level, we didn't have enough spare parts to bring all 7 ships up to full combat readiness, so Zhao would have hard decisions to make. Whatever he did, he was sure to get second-guessed by politicians on Earth. That was nothing new. The U.S. Congress is quick to vote for buying shiny new tanks, jets, and ships, but unexciting stuff like spare parts and maintenance gets cut from the budget. Okay, enough about nerdy logistics details. Simps, Skippy is confident this attack will be a success. You've seen the simulations.
I have seen what Skippy thinks will happen. I also know that absent-minded beer can always forgets something.
She looked at the ceiling, even though Skippy was not aboard her ship. The beer can wisely chose not to say anything.
I wish Zhao didn't insist Valkyrie remain hidden during the battle. I think he's wrong about that.
He wants the kiddies to know the Navy can kick ass without Valkyrie. We'll be there in an instant if needed. Don't worry about us. You. She looked to the side for a moment and muted the conversation while she spoke with her crew. Then she looked back at me.
I have to go.
Trouble?
Nothing other than the usual. See you on the other side, sir.
See you later, Captain Simms. To prepare for the battle, Valkyrie had to slow down. Accompanied by the destroyer squadron, we decelerated until our velocity relative to the enemy formation was less than 2,000 kilometers per second. At that point, the destroyers cut thrust to coast onward, while our mighty battlecruiser continued to fire the main reactionless engines. When we also cut thrust, we were moving at the same speed and in the same direction as the enemy ships at a distance of 9 light hours. We were also several light minutes from the Third Fleet, which was growing more distant every second. The first action of the battle was the destroyer Wenzhou jumping in 7 light minutes from the enemy near one of the probes that had been launched earlier. The probe confirmed that there was no detectable change in the status of the enemy ships, so the Wenzhou jumped back near the Third Fleet's flagship to report. Moments later, a signal was sent to Valkyrie through the micro wormhole that was about to be severed. The operation was a go. The destroyer Boston was first into the fight, accompanied by the Chennai and the Cordoba. The 3 escort ships immediately lit off their active sensors, flooding the area with powerful waves of radiation that quickly pinpointed the enemy ships, regardless of their sophisticated stealth fields. Even before the sensor echoes returned, the destroyers were launching missiles as quickly as their launchers could line them up and shoot them out into space. Along with missiles equipped with ship-killer warheads were missiles dedicated to jamming and blinding enemy point defense sensors and missiles that ejected disposable active sensor beacons. During its short life, each beacon sent out intense pulses of photons that pinpointed the locations of the enemy ships and made their stealth technology useless at such short range. The active sensor pulses generated by the 3 destroyers were useful, even though the location of the enemy formation was known within 7 kilometers before the battle began. The missiles weaving toward their targets at high speed kept the enemy point defenses busy, though it was unlikely any of the missiles would score a direct hit. The third action of the destroyers was the most vital. They deployed their damping fields, preventing the enemy ships from jumping away. The crews of the Maxulk's warships were not startled to learn the hunters had become the hunted. They were shocked. They were stunned into disbelieving inaction for critical moments, during which time their AIs pleaded for authorization to move, to attempt a jump before the damping fields saturated the area, or to shoot back, to do anything. By the time shock turned to anger, it was too late to jump, so the task force commander hastily considered his options and did exactly the wrong thing. Keeping the formation tightly together, he ordered his big ships to fire their cannons on the impertinent human ships, certain that the thinly protected destroyers would soon be blasted out of the sky. The AIs warned that tactic was unlikely to be effective,
The human ships were far enough away that speed of light weapons fire would find only empty space by the time the photons reached the spot where the destroyers used to be. And the relative speed of the destroyers would carry them out of damping field range soon anyway, after which... too late. As the Boston and its companions flew onward and their projected damping fields became less dense, three more UN Navy destroyers jumped in on the opposite side of the enemy formation and added their damping fields and missiles to the fight. Seconds later, the squadron centered on Boston jumped away, just as seven former Extinction-class battlecruisers emerged. These heavy ships had performed an initial jump 3 light seconds away to get pinpoint data on enemy positions without being in weapons range, so their own weapons were ready to shoot as soon as their ships recovered from jump distortion. Moving much faster than the destroyers, the battlecruisers flashed through the enemy formation like sharks through a school of fish, raking the enemy with point-blank directed energy and railgun fire and leaving dozens of missiles buzzing like angry hornets in their wakes. Damping fields projected by the enemy had no practical effect. The UN Navy ships had no intention of jumping until their momentum carried them out to a distance where the enemy fields were weak, which is exactly what they did, jumping away to emerge behind the enemy formation again for another strafing pass as the squadron led by Boston also jumped in to continue keeping the enemy pinned down. Too late again, the enemy commander realized that keeping his ships bunched in a tight formation was good for mutual fire support, but bad for survival. He ordered his own destroyers to burn hard in pursuit of their human counterparts, to cut off the source of the damping fields, and ordered his four capital ships to disperse, running toward the edge of the damping effect as quickly as possible. As the bubble containing his ships expanded, the damping fields would become thinner, and soon the humans would have to decide which of his ships to pursue while allowing the others to escape. Dispersing the formation was a standard and very sensible battle tactic, and exactly what Admiral Zhao hoped his opponent would do. "Attack option Bravo," he signaled to all ships, to the relief of all and the delight of many. The seven battlecruisers, maintaining a tight grouping to better concentrate their cannon fire and provide mutual defense against the clouds of enemy missiles, jumped in near the Maxalk's battleship. That massive capital ship had broken away from the others, accelerating at its maximum, though still ponderous, speed. Already battered by being raked with fire on two close passes, the battleship found itself the focus of seven newer and substantially upgraded battlecruisers. When the human ships flashed past out of directed energy range, the battleship was slowly tumbling nose over tail, its main engines wrecked, and a 200-meter gash across its belly. A heavy cruiser was the next victim, unable to effectively fight back against an enemy that appeared and zipped past before the cruiser's targeting AI could recommend a strategy better than simply shooting slightly ahead of each oncoming ship. After the first heavy cruiser exploded in a truly impressive ball of plasma, momentarily blinking out every sensor in the area, the more senior captain of the two surviving heavy cruisers decided on her own to change tactics. She directed her ship to close with the other capital ship and recalled the destroyers to provide protection. She also instructed the missiles, which had been flying around rather uselessly, to boost outward so they would be in position to intercept the next time the human ships emerged. All of her decisions were rational and sensible, and the first time the task force had made a plan that took into account the unique situation. Unfortunately for the Maxalks, their enemy also made plans and adjusted those plans as circumstances changed. Seeing hundreds of ship-killer missiles clustering in a loose cloud where they could pounce on his battlecruisers the next time they jump in for a pass, Zhao ordered his ships to change their jump programming. The next time his seven battlecruisers emerged, the cloud of missiles were already behind them and moving far too slowly to do anything useful. Plus, they exhausted their fuel supply in a futile attempt to catch the human ships, so on the next pass, all they could do was watch their targets cruise past, tantalizingly out of range. 17 minutes after the destroyer Boston was the first ship to jump in, the last Maxalt's heavy cruiser exploded. "All ships, general pursuit," Admiral Zhao ordered as he designated an enemy destroyer for each of his battlecruisers, except for his own. "Good hunting, and be quick about it." Each of the six Maxalk's destroyers instantly had an advanced technology battlecruiser on its tail. It was a short, brutal, and one-sided fight, while Zhao took his own ship to attack the enemy support ship, knocking out its jump drive and main engines with precision fire. The last jump of the engagement took the UN Navy ships 30 light seconds away from the site of the battle. All that remained within the battle zone was a broken battleship, a single heavy cruiser that was shot full of holes, tumbling chunks of debris both large and small, and confused missiles that had no targets.
"General Bishop," Zhao called me. Due to the time lag in the transition, I didn't bother responding until he indicated he was done talking. "Phase one is successfully complete."
As he spoke, I quickly scanned the battle damage report, my eyes automatically focusing on the Defiant. No significant damage there. Symbols for the other six battle cruisers were all glowing yellow, indicating that whatever hits they had taken had not substantially degraded their combat capabilities. The destroyers were all green except for the Bremen, which glowed orange due to having lost three shield projectors.
"Damn. I call that a success for sure."
Zhao continued.
"Bremen will proceed to Point Whiskey to effect repairs."
He meant that battle-damaged ship would jump in the opposite direction from the waiting star carriers to avoid drawing attention to them.
"We will be decelerating for the next few hours," he added, and that answered my next question.
He intended to match course and speed with the planet Tassa Fordanda to commence with an orbital bombardment.
"Would you mind keeping our guests entertained?"
A smile crept onto his face.
"As we discussed, over."
"Admiral, congratulations," I replied, speaking quickly because he would have to wait 30 seconds to hear me.
"You trashed the hotel, and we get stuck cleaning up the mess. Got it."
"Over."